You are listening to Absent Minded, brought to you by HabsEyesOnThePrize.com. Hello and welcome to Absent Minded. My name is Jared Book, and we are ever closer to knowing who will be on the Canadiens opening day roster as they set up their team for the opening game on Wednesday night in Toronto. Joining me today, Anton Rosgaard and Matt Drake. Anton, how are you?
Oh, I'm perfectly fine, thank you. How are you, Jared?
I'm doing well. Matt, how are you doing?
I'm terrific. I'm ready for regular season hockey, finally.
Yeah, it's been a long road. And just before we started recording this, obviously the big story was on Sunday when they put Gustav Lindstrom and Joel Armia on waivers. But we got new news this morning that they also sent down Matthias Norlander and Emil Heinemann, who don't require waivers and have set their opening night roster, assuming none of these moves are paper transactions and will make everything that we're saying today no longer valid. But we're hoping that doesn't happen. But let's start with the big news, because I think the big news and the big surprise was that they actually decided to take Joel Armia off the roster and go with their young players and their players who were performing, quite frankly, better than him in the preseason. Matt, you started banging this drum early in the preseason, and the Canadiens actually did the thing.
I wrote about it once in the Bottom 6 Minutes articles. Anybody who's been listening to the Bottom Six knows that I've said it a few times when he's been out there. But Joel Armia, just, he has not looked like an NHL player. He's been kind of floating out there. I have not seen an effort level from a guy who wants to be playing on an NHL roster this season. And I think, you know, you look at his overall performance the last few years, I think this was an overdue move for them to make something happen there. I do think, you know, maybe the delay of it, maybe why they didn't do it sooner, is probably because they were trying to work out a trade. But that contract is a damn albatross to try and get rid of. You're kind of stuck with it. It was one of the worst parting gifts that Bergevin could have given the organization. And they kind of got to do what they can. So now they're going to get some relief from him going to the minors. I don't think anybody's picking him up. I've racked my brain after I heard the news that he was getting put on waivers. I'm like, who could possibly use him? The only team I could think of that maybe could use him is just Arizona, just because they're the contract graveyard of the league. So it's the only team I could see maybe taking that flyer on him, but I really don't think anybody will. So they'll get some cap relief. And then they also get, you know, the added benefit of being able to play better players in the NHL. I mean, it's a good decision by the Habs. I'm glad they finally, you know, jumped the gun and made that shot.
Yeah, I agree. Joel Armia has been a terrific servant for especially the old regime with Julien and also Ducharme, but he doesn't work apparently in Martin St. Louis' more, you know, free-flowing brand of hockey. He hasn't lived up to his expectations, and he's also been injured. So in the last three seasons, he's recorded 14 points in each of those seasons. Well, it's been, in 2021, it was a, you know, shortened season and all. And then he's, as I said, been injured, but he hasn't performed well since the 1920 season. So basically he got the bag, the four-year deal that Marc Bergevin handed out. And then it felt like he stopped trying. Obviously he is trying out there, but it's just like, you don't see the effort that you see from a couple of the younger guys who are trying to take his spot. And then, you know, you can only do it for so long and give him that many possibilities to find his flow again before you have to say that this is just not working out for us. And, you know, the best thing for Joel Armia, if he indeed goes through waivers and goes down to Laval, is just to show himself at a, you know, at a lower level and be a, you know, a sort of big brother figure for a couple of the younger guys in Laval. and find that flow again. Maybe all he needs is a little bit more, you know, time on the ice, which he will get in the AHL, a bigger role. He has a lot of hockey in him, but he hasn't shown it for 3 years now.
Yeah, he's really, you know, both of you kind of touched on it. He's really one of the only players to get worse under Martin St. Louis from Dominique Ducharme. And I think a lot of that is his style of play. I don't think it's anything to do with, you know, effort and things like that. I just think that he's a player that really worked well when the emphasis on the offense was the point shot. Right, because he would retrieve pucks, get it back to the point, and just kind of stay in front of the net, and he doesn't really do the things that Martin St. Louis preaches. Like, he doesn't do the movement on the ice and the kind of everybody in a spot and positionless hockey and all that. He just doesn't do, like, he's not built for that, and that's not a knock on him, really. It's just the reality of the situation where it's becoming a team that's playing a certain style. And I think that, you know, in our chat, you know, during the last preseason game, I think it was Justin who mentioned, like, this team is just fast, and Joel Armia is just not fast. Like, that's not his game, right? And I think that it's, again, not a knock on him. It's just the way this team is going. There's other players you would rather see, and evaluate. Quite frankly,
I think
that's it.
I would have to say there is a knock on him, though. I disagree on the part about the effort. I do not think that the effort is there. Look at Joshua Roy, a guy who is certainly not one of the fastest players on the roster. He's been getting a lot faster as he's developed, but he's still not, to this day, one of the fastest players on the roster. And he hasn't looked out of place once when he was playing with the NHL team. Why did Yoel Armia look so out of place? I would say he's probably at least as fast as Joshua Roy. So what's the difference? I really think part and parcel is the effort. You saw that one play in the red and white game where he ended up getting beat by Kirby Dach and then shoved him from behind towards the goaltender. Number one, never shove anybody from behind into your own goaltender. That's just, I don't know why there's still so many players in the NHL that do that when they get beat. It's like they get frustrated and they're like, well, I gotta do something. I gotta land a shot on this guy. So they shove him right into the goaltender. Now, nothing ended up happening out of it, but it pissed me off to no end because I'm like, you got beat in a red and white scrimmage and you decide to shove, you know, one of our actual top six players towards a goaltender. I don't like that at all. And why did that happen? Well, it's because you got caught flat-footed and you got beat, all right? In a scrimmage in particular, you get beat because you're flat-footed. I want to see you just, you know, drop your head, go out next shift and work a little bit harder, right? Definitely don't throw a little tantrum and push the guy towards the goaltender. And I would say the same thing even for regular games. Like, don't shove people towards your goaltender. It's just dumb. And I think it's a byproduct of him not necessarily having that effort, but also at the same time, not having the ability to position himself to avoid having to catch up to players like that, right? I don't think anybody expects him to catch Kirby Dach. Kirby Dach is faster than he is. However, he could put himself in a position where he can actually D up Kirby Dach and not have to be coming from behind and trying to chase him down. So I don't necessarily disagree with what you said, Jared, but I do have those knocks on Yoel Armia and his performance so far. It's been problematic for me. So that's why I like so much that they made this decision.
In fairness to Armia, just before I quickly, Anton, he wouldn't be the only veteran to not show effort in the preseason. but on the other hand, his job was literally on the line as well, right? So you would expect him to show a little bit more. Just go ahead.
No, I would just like to add that Joshua Roy, as a comparison, Joshua Roy lives very much, I mean, he's not the fastest, but he's highly intelligent on the ice. He plays a very intelligent style of game. And Joel Armia has never been that kind of player. He's never been the dangle master, the setup man, the guy who positions himself super well. He's been, you know, he's needed the physicality and the effort to actually make an impact. And now that he doesn't, it's kind of like falls flat. He can't really compensate with, positioning himself well and being the intelligent man because it's just not his style of play.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, Matt mentioned the albatrosses that Marc Bergevin, the parting gifts that Marc Bergevin left. And the only ones left, really, are David Savard and Christian Dvorak, both of which have some semblance of value to this team in some capacity.
Brendan Gallagher as well.
I wouldn't necessarily call that a... I mean, yes, that contract is not very good. But he still has value on the ice as well, right? He brings something, right? No one's talking about, you know, Brendan Gallagher being a healthy scratch in this lineup. I don't think he'll ever be a healthy scratch. I think if he ever gets to a point where he's not good enough, it's because he's hurt.
He's been a comeback candidate every year, right? Because you look at his stats, and if you're looking just at his EP page, right, you're going to go, oh, this is a brutal contract, right? Because he's not, the goals and assists aren't there. But if you know what he's actually doing out there, if you know he gets a lot of pucks to the net, and he gets a lot of pucks to the net in high danger areas, that's why he's been almost every year a candidate for potentially a comeback player. But of course, the injuries, and he just seems snake bitten. So like, I agree, there's still some value there. Whereas, you know, with a guy like Armia, I don't think anybody had ever been at any point in the last couple of years saying, oh yeah, here's a comeback candidate for you.
Yeah. And you know, even the Josh Anderson contract probably won't age very well. But you know, I think it's going to be very interesting to see how this team, you know, goes about the cap, because they have most of their guys locked in for at least their main guys locked in, at least at forward, for a couple of years. So it'll be very interesting to see how that goes. The other guy they sent down on Sunday was Gustav Lindstrom. Probably not as big a
Habs
surprise.
Habs legend, Gustav Lindstrom.
Well, you know what? He's a perfect, you know, everyone's saying, oh, this just shows the Petry trade was bad. But really, he was there as an insurance policy. If the young players took a step back or if someone got hurt, you had Gustav Lindstrom to make your opening day roster. But him going to Laval is not an indictment on that. It just means that there are better, younger players that were better. And one of them was sent down in Matthias Nylander. So I think that he's organizational depth. He plays on the right side, which is very important in today's NHL. There's not that many right-handed defensemen. And so I think that, you know, both of those things, he'll go to Laval. He's a guy that you can put in the lineup, put out of the lineup. He's a guy you can call up if somebody gets hurt and you don't mind sitting in the press box. There's still some intriguing, you know, he's still useful if he doesn't get claimed and get sent to Laval. But I don't think it's a surprise, A, because the team was healthy, except for Chris Weidman on defense. And B, everybody, you know, he was outplayed by at least about 7-8 guys on the defense. So there wasn't really much room for him.
I'm getting a little bit of Gustav Olofsson vibes. Just, you know, he was thinking of old Gustavs in the Montreal Canadiens organization who, you know, came as a kind of like, you know, meh trade and then never really stuck. But yeah,
he was depth. He was depth, and everybody knew that from the start. I don't think he was acquired. He wasn't the main piece in that Petry trade. They wanted to get the pick and they wanted to get out from under the rest of Petry's money, or at least the amount of it that they could. And I think they took him just to shore up their depth because they knew, okay, well, we had Petry, now we're no longer going to have him. We're going to need bodies because I've said this before, right? They're probably, we hope, going to have less man games lost to injury this season, but it's not going to be zero. There's going to be injuries. You're going to need people that you can bring up and that are capable of skating NHL minutes, which he is. Now, of course, it should go mentioned that everybody's favorite fake scout that shall remain nameless had predicted Gustav Lindstrom to be on the top pair at one point during the preseason. That's obviously not going to happen and was never going to happen, but it's depth, right? They have the ability to pull this guy up anytime they want and he can play, you know, bottom pair minutes and it's not going to be a big problem for them. I don't think, however, that he's going to be very high on the call-up list. I think based on what they've said, based on what I've heard from Martin Saint-Louis, at least in his interviews, I think they really want to see what Logan Mailloux can do at some point. So I could see him getting called up. I think William Trudeau is the most deserving of anybody that's currently down in Laval of getting a call up. So
Matthias Norlander is there now as well.
Matthias Norlander was, we haven't gotten to him yet, so I wasn't going to bring him up. Thanks for spoiling the rest of the podcast, Anton. All I'm trying to say is there's a number of guys who definitely are more deserving of that call up than Lindstrom. I think he's pretty low on the list. He's depth. It's decent depth to have. It's always good to have more bodies that you can pull up that have played NHL minutes. And we'll see. I think the Habs brass is probably hoping that they don't have to call him up this year because it would mean that they had to go through options 1, 2, 3, and 4 already.
Yeah, he's really the perfect guy to call up if someone gets hurt for a little bit and you need somebody to be like that extra body. He's kind of the guy you would call up for that, right? You're not going to call up a Trudeau or a Norlander or a Mayu to kind of fill that spot, or even a Struble. Kind of like a little bit like Brady Keeper, right? Like he's just one of those guys, and you need to have that guy in Laval that can just solidify that right side. And they have Keeper there now, and they have now they have Lindstrom as well, that they can rotate in and out of the lineup if they need to. And that's, there's value in that. There's value in having the guy that's there. And this sounds like I'm knocking him, but there's still very good hockey players in the AHL or NHL bubble, yeah, right? Like it's not like I'm saying he's a bad hockey player. It's just, it's very useful for an organization to have guys like that you can call up so that you're not rushing players.
You can draw a lot of comparisons to another former Red Wing in Xavier Ouellette, who was with the Habs for a number of years and never really stuck in the NHL, but was a great guy for Laval. And, in Lindstrom, I think, well, he turns 25 in a couple of weeks. And unless he does the Brett Kulak like trajectory of just, suddenly breaking out, then you probably kind of know what you have in him, and he can probably be a valuable asset for Laval and someone, as you said, Jared, that you can throw up in any kind of situation and just play a few games and then get sent down again.
Yeah, and those things also mean that he's more likely to get claimed on waivers than Neil Armia,
for sure.
Not that I think he will, but if you're talking about who's more likely to be claimed, It's definitely Lindstrom over Armia, just because that, the $3.4 million for this season and next season, there aren't a lot of teams that can fit that in. And let's face it, if there was interest, he would have been traded and not put on waivers. and the Canadians, and that's something I want to touch on. We didn't really touch on it, but I want to touch on it quickly, is that the Canadians could have probably retained contract or held on to him to see if they can eke out a draft pick. And they just said no. Like they're past that point in the rebuild, and they moved on to a different phase of it, where now they're evaluating young players as opposed to just collecting assets. And I think that's an important distinction to make a little bit. Like, they're still rebuilding. They're still not going to make the playoffs this year in all likelihood, but they're moved on to a different stage. And I think that's indicative of what they're doing. And, they're trying to surround themselves with better players, because you can argue that Tanner Pearson's basically replacing Joel Armia, right? Like that roster spot that was set for a veteran who's going to play bottom 6 minutes is now Tanner Pearson's and not Joel Armia's. And I think that it became clear as the preseason went on that they were not going to have room for both of them. And that's exactly what happened. And we, people were scared that he was, Tanner Pearson was going to take a spot from a young guy. But in reality, they made the decision to take it away from Armia, which, like I said, moving on to the next phase. They're not just holding on to guys just to collect the draft pick at the deadline. And you kind of saw that last year, right? With the guys like Dadonov and even, to a certain extent, Hoffman, where they were clearly not better than a Harvey Pinard or an Ullinen or guys like that, but they were keeping them around and hoping to trade them, and in the end they did trade Dadonov, but and they trade Hoffman too, actually. I was like, wait a second, they did trade him too. So
which was shocking that they were even able to do, because that contract seemed about as much of an albatross as Joel Armia's,
right? It was only Jeff Petrie coming back that probably made that easy. And also Pittsburgh, sending that to San Jose too, right?
I mean, it was only 1 year left now on Hoffman's deal. So it always gets easier when it's only 1 year left.
Right. Which is what makes Pearson a guy to circle at the trade deadline too.
Exactly.
Especially if he stays healthy.
They have what? Correct me if I'm wrong. One retention spot left. They were never going to use that on Joel Armia. With what he's got 2 years left on his deal, like they're not going to eat up that much salary for another 2 years. Use up
for what, a fourth round pick?
They want, right? They want that flexibility.
Yeah,
they want that flexibility, because what if they need to eat somebody else's salary and it's going to be like a first or a second round pick that they're going to be getting at the deadline, right?
Yeah.
I think Kent Hughes wants to maintain that ability to say, okay, well, I can still retain a contract And at least then he'd be moving somebody who's a lot more likely to attract interest, right? Like a Tanner Pearson. I think with how much he makes, and if they were able to retain, if they retain 50% and they trade him at the deadline, I think if he does even just decently well this season, he might make himself pretty attractive to some contenders.
I can see Tampa Bay Lightning paying 3 first round picks for Tanner Pearson at the day.
trading their trading a 12-year-old, right? Because that's the only first round pick they have is 12-year-old right now. Let's move on to the news from Monday morning, and mildly surprising, but really not. And I think the most surprising thing about them sending Matthias Norlander to Laval is that it wasn't Justin Barron. And I think that the more that I think about it, the more I understand. And it really comes down to Justin Barron being on the right side. There's a clear path for him to get playing time. And kind of rotate in and out of lineup than there would be for Norlander. And I think that I think the biggest surprise, and I'm going to say surprise because I don't think Joshua Roy or William Trudeau were necessarily surprises, but the biggest surprise of this camp was probably Matthias Norlander becoming an NHL option again. Because I think we talked about this a little bit when we were talking about the first round of cuts. And how he was ranked in the top 25 under 25. None of us really believed in him. But I think that him becoming that kind of player is huge for the Canadiens, because I think that there's, you know, he goes from a guy who is, you know, maybe struggling to get into the lineup in Laval to being, you know, one of the first options to be called up to the NHL.
Yeah, and he adds such an exciting element as well. And that was basically what we were missing from last year. Because it didn't show the element that he had shown, especially during the Mudo season, post draft, and also in the few games he actually got to play with Frölunda when he wasn't injured. It was the exciting rush element that he had to his game, where he could, you know, transition the puck from defense to offense. He could dangle a little. He could provide both a shooting and passing option. And in Laval last season, you didn't really see that. You saw more of a, you know, stay at home kind of defenseman. And that was not what the Habs thought they were getting when they signed him. So I remember, like, I met him and Emil Heinemann during the spring when I was in Montreal, and I had heard Patrick saying before that, well, Matthias is a little bit shy, he's a little bit, you know, withdrawn, and it may be difficult to get him to talk. And I didn't feel like that at all. So I think that he gained a lot from Emil Heinemann coming over. Getting a Swedish guy in the same age as him, you know, to just being around him and going through the same thing as he was. I heard that he was hanging around a lot with Jan Mišák before, and Jan Mišák got Jakub Dobeš at the same time. So he got a Czech compatriot at the same time. And all of a sudden we see both Mišák and Norlander performing better, and maybe being both valuable, you know, options for the future. I think that Matthias Norlander just needed a little bit of confidence. He needed to play most of all last season. And now he looks like the kind of confidence, the confidence is up there. And all of a sudden he looks like someone who could one day be an NHL player, if it's with the Habs or somewhere else. But, you know, he looks like he could have a future in the league.
Yeah, and, you know, he was one of the few guys in that preseason that looked pretty damn capable on the power play, right? The power play, let's face it, been pretty atrocious. It's probably not going to be great this season. It looks too predictable. You know, you can see that they're trying to funnel that puck to Cole Caulfield. And, you know, as accomplished of a shooter as he is, this that sheer predictability of it is going to make it tough for the Habs. But when Norlander was out there, you know, he's trying some sneak attack shots from the point where he's just letting a quick release go through traffic and it's finding the net. And even when he's not finding the net, I mean, he's making smart passes. He had a play where he picked one out of midair and held the line during the power play. I mean, he was, I would say, and this might be a bit of a hot take, but I would say he was probably the most potent looking power play player out there for them in the preseason. Now, you know, it's preseason. They're still working out some kinks. I think, as we all know, Caulfield is going to be the guy that they're looking to try and get going on the power play. Nick Suzuki, probably a close second. But Norlander, if they happen to need a body at any point, he offers at the very least better power play skills than they're getting from anybody else. And I would even say better than Logan Mailloux, who is, you know, well known for what he does on the power play specifically, that being his maybe number one asset that might get him to that next level. But I think Matthias Norlander may have usurped him on that front. And if they're looking at any point and they're saying, okay, well, we need a body from Laval and we also need it to be somebody who can play on the power play, they might be looking at Norlander first before before even Logan Mailloux. So I think he did enough to put himself on the map. I was surprised, though, that that it was him going down and not Justin Barron. I mean, I think if you were going on pure merit, if you were just looking at the way those two different players played throughout the preseason, it's Matthias Norlander in a landslide for sure. If you pulled the fan base, I think it would probably be 60-40, if not even worse, in favor of Matthias Norlander, saying that he should be the guy to make the team. So I think that's a little bit strange. I don't necessarily love it, but at the same time, it makes sense. Norlander's going to get more minutes as a result of being down there. He'll probably get to play power play one for Laval, and we'll see. If he can keep doing the kind of things that he's been doing in the preseason so far in the AHL, he's gonna start real nice, and he's going to put himself on the map for the first call-up.
Yeah, it's really interesting because I think there's a parallel to where Justin Barron was last year and where Matthias Norlander is this year, in that Matthias Norlander, he's been in Laval for two seasons, two full seasons, I think, or maybe even just one full season and then one of that half and half season. One full season, one half and half season. He's never really been the guy in Laval, right? Like, he never really played power play in Laval. He never really played top pairing minutes in Laval. I'm thinking that they're sending him down to be the guy, right? Like, he's going to be likely the top power play guy. He's going to be playing because I want to see this Matthias Norlander that we saw in the preseason in Laval, because we haven't really seen it there. And I think that is going to be indicative of what he does from here. And I don't know what the team said to him before being sent down, but it's clear that he got every opportunity in the NHL and showed himself to be a very good option. And I think that if he can be that player in Laval for a bit, that'll help him once he gets to the NHL too. Because as much as we've seen it in the preseason, we didn't see that Matthias Norlander in Laval. And J.F. Hull didn't use him like that. So I'm very curious to see how he balances him and whether he gets that power play time, because he didn't really get it before. And I think that he's shown to be that guy now. And you know, before, you know, in Sweden, you watch some of those clips and he's dynamic. He's everything. And you watch him, you know, in early in Laval and in, you know, early in his NHL time, he was nowhere close to that. You know, he looked like his wings were clipped, and now he's finally starting to emerge again. And I want to see that confidence in Laval, and I want to see confidence put in him, and not just, you know, he played some penalty killing in Laval, but I think that there's an opportunity there. Laval's power play is going to be very good. And between Joshua Roy, Norlander, and, Elias Andersson, another Swede, and also the guy that was sent down with Norlander on Monday morning, and that's Emil Heinemann. And we'll transition to him, because I feel like people were expecting him to make the team in some capacity. I don't know if he was ever a favorite for that spot, especially with the emergence of Raphael Harvey-Pinard and the fact that Essi Ullinen needed waivers. I don't know if he would have been a guy that outplayed both of them, and he didn't in the preseason, but he's a guy that also is one of those forwards now, one of those players in Laval that will likely be a future Montreal Canadian. It's just a matter of when.
Yeah. I mean, he had a pretty impressive preseason. Like, he's very physical in the offensive zone. On the forecheck, I really liked it. Like, he landed some nice reverse hits. Like, he looks like a tank out there at times, and obviously has a very good shot. I think there's a universe where he could have made that Montreal Canadiens team. And I think you hit the nail on the head there, is Ullinen requiring waivers. You don't want to expose him to waivers because somebody's picking him up. He's not going to go through like Yoel Armia. He's cheap and he's got a real nice shot. So Laval is going to miss him, but I think it's going to be interesting to see how he can take a spot on the Montreal Canadiens roster. And Heinemann's going to get his chance to do exactly that eventually as well. A lot of those same qualities I talked about, the physicality, the ability to help out on the power play, just having an absolute beast of a shot. Those are things that, you know, when you get called up, you can make a name for yourself. We saw him do it last year when he went over to Laval and he was scoring. Well, I think it was in his first 8 games. He had 7 goals or something like that. And everybody was going, okay, this kid's show ready. He could play in the NHL right now. You see how those skills, that ability to put the puck in the back of the net, it can really quickly put you on the map. And as long as he keeps doing exactly that in Laval, putting the puck in the net, and potentially, as you mentioned, might get some serious power play minutes in order to do that, he as well could be somebody that they could be looking to call up whenever they need a body up front.
Yeah, for sure. Emil Heinemann is interesting in what you say, that he adds both a physical element and that he can score, obviously. And the Habs need a few more elements. Well, long-term, they will need more elements on the power play to be more deceptive. As you said, it's mostly just going to Cole Caulfield at this point, or finding Nick Suzuki on the, you know, in his favorite position where he can score. So I just, you know... For me, it doesn't matter that these guys are going down now, because the Habs aren't supposed to be good now anyway. The important thing is that they're showing growth and that they're showing, you know, that they are progressing the right way. It demonstrates that the Canadians have done something right in regards to their talent development team in the last few years. Finally, finally, we can see a clear path going from, you know, being drafted to going to Laval and then coming up to the NHL. We see guys, Jesse Ylönen is a prime example of that. He's 24 now, and now it looks like he is supposed to be a mainstay on the team. And he was drafted in 2017. It's been 6 years, and now finally he makes the team out of camp. Some would argue that he should have stayed with the team last year out of camp as well, but he got sent down, proved himself one last time in Laval, and now he's with the Canadiens. Next year, I'm not expecting the Canadiens to re-sign someone like Tanner Pearson. We also don't know what's going to happen with guys like Christian Dvorak, Sean Monahan. Michael Pezzetta is always going to be in that folder of being the 12th, 13th forward. There's going to be space for these guys to come up. We see, I hope that we get to see guys like Sean Farrell, Joshua Roy, Riley Kidney, light it up together with Heinemann and really turning Laval into a juggernaut this season. That will be beneficial for all of their development. And then we have these guys that maybe can fill in the roster spots and on the second, third line in a couple of years' time.
Yeah, it's going to be very interesting. We talked about how the Armia waiver, putting him on waivers, was moving on to a separate phase of the rebuild. Another part of that separate phase is that your Laval team ends up being very, very good and young. And I'm just looking at Cap Friendly and the forwards that Montreal, the players that Montreal have in Laval right now are remarkably young, right? Like you have Meshar, who's 19, Farrell 21, Heinemann 21, Simoneau 22, Kidney 20, Roy 20, Mishak 21, Legare 22. Then you have Maillet, who's 30 and like by far the oldest guy. Lucas Condotta is 25. Mitchell Stevens, 26. Elias Anderson, 24. Then you move to the defense. They have Mayu, who's 20. Struble, who's 22. Merlinder, 23. Trudeau, 20. Baudin, 24. Keeper, 27. Like, this is a remarkably young team that's going to be in Laval. And some of those guys will have to go to the ECHL just to get playing time. And it's kind of... We kept on talking about this organizational depth that they have, and the top 25 under 25 is a good example of that. And now we're going to start to see the cream rise to the top and which one ends up, which ones, you know, show themselves to be better than the rest. Because that's right now, we know these players, they're we know their names, we know their history. But at a certain point, it's going to come down to who performs. And, you know, there's not enough room on the roster for all of them. That's you know, it's evident when you're getting guys sent down like Norlander and Heinemann, who had pretty good training camps. And it's going to be very interesting to see who steps up. And, you know, I think a guy like Joshua Roy will likely not be in Laval very long if his preseason game is any indication. And I think he got like 3 assists in that game. if not four. But he's going to be a guy like Laval. I said it on Twitter or X or whatever. I'm still calling it Twitter. A few days ago, Laval is going to be the most offensively skilled team they've ever had. And it comes down to guys like Heinemann and Roy and Kidney and Meshar and Farrell, and all the, I mean, even guys like Maillet and Anderson as well, Stevens, who had a great end of the season. And it's going to be, you know, then you look at the guys like Norlander and Mayu and Struble, who can bring some offense as well. It's going to be one of those things that they're going to be fun. They might lose games like 6-5. At times, but they're going to probably also win games 6-5. And it's going to be like Laval. Last year, the knock on Laval was that they didn't have any top prospects, right? It was like Harvey Pinard and you know, Barron, I guess, and Ullinen, but all the other guys stayed up in the NHL, right? But now you have Mayu and you have Dobesh and you have Farrell and you have Heinemann and you have Roy and you have Kidney and Meshar and all these guys who are top prospects for this organization, and it's a different phase of the rebuild, and I think that both teams will learn as they're going, and it's gonna be a fun year. I think like we had a couple of really not fun years, like the obviously the Ducharme year was just not fun. Like it was a bad.
Well, it was
year.
up and down. It was up and down. First, it was, you know, getting to the Stanley Cup final.
I meant the year after, not the Stanley Cup final year. I mean, literally the year they finished last in the league. That year was not fun. Last year was a bit more fun, but still, you know, they were overmatched. There were lots of injuries. And, you know, I'm knocking on wood right now, but they've been moderately healthy so far this preseason. Which is why all these people are in Laval, let's be honest. So that's part of it too. But a couple of years that were not very fun. They had fun moments, but not very fun. This year, I think, is going to be fun. It might not be successful in terms of playoffs or wins and, you know, at least with consistency, but I think it's going to be a lot more fun this year.
Mm.
I also think, like, have a chance, yeah, if you're in the Montreal area, going to see a Laval Rocket game or two or three or four would be really fun this year. I kind of wish that I was there, I was there for the playoff push this last spring. But yeah, for now, this could be a really interesting year in terms of Habs development. And I would argue also, like, yeah, we've had two not very fun years, but it's not been fun to follow the Montreal Canadiens for a long time. They're the most successful franchise in the NHL, but they've done a lot of things wrong in the last 30 years in terms, especially of talent development. So it's been, I remember talking to my friend who's a New York Rangers fan a couple of years back, and he was arguing that, well, the Canadiens are always going to be a bubble team. Because they're too afraid of being stinkingly bad a couple of seasons and tank out. And I think that was part of it. You know, there's a pride in the organization of not being the worst. And all of a sudden, we've had to come to terms with being down there with Arizona and Anaheim and all these teams. But I think that could also be beneficial for the way the organization looks at themselves. It can't always be about old merits and, you know, what did the Richards do 50, 60 years ago? We have to look forward as well. And now at least it feels like we're turning a corner and maybe it can be up to something more than just a bubble team.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be fun. You know, the home opener in Laval is sold out already. And so there's obviously some interest there as well. I mean, there were a lot of fans that were upset that the preseason game was closed to the public. And that just goes to show you how excited fans are about the Rocket and about the future, because yeah, like Anton mentioned, there's been moments that have been fun. You know, a few playoff runs that have been fun, but you never got the idea that what they were doing was sustainable. And now you're kind of like, this might be, I mentioned Laval, how Laval might be the most offensively skilled they've ever been. This might be like the most offensively skilled the Canadiens organization has been in like 30 years. And in terms of the prospects coming up, in terms of, you know, guys like Suzuki and Doc and Caulfield in the NHL, like there's a lot of skill now that didn't used to necessarily be there. And I think that, you know, they do need to develop and show themselves. Like, I'm not going to say that they're the most offensively skilled NHL team that they've had, because that's not true. But organization wise, like, we're a long way from like the Daniel Carrs and Charles Hudons being like the top prospects. And that's not a knock on them. It's just the reality of the situation that there's a lot more opportunities for players now. And I don't know whether it's going to be Joshua Roy or Sean Farrell or Emil Heinemann, but I'm pretty sure that one of them will become a top six NHL player. Whereas I, you know, before it had to be Daniel Carr, or it had to be Charles Hudon, or it had to be, you know, Nikita Sherbak, or, you know, one of those, it had to be one of the, like, a specific guy, or it had to be a Michael McCarron. And now it's like, you know, if it's not one of them, it's going to be somebody else. And then, you know, all of a sudden Raphael Harvey-Pinard becomes a potential top six player out of nowhere. And I think that's kind of the fun of it, is that now it's up to the players. And the Canadians have put themselves in a good position. And yes, they're missing that elite player. But if you collect enough of the B players, it can get you an opportunity to find one of them to become an A. And that's kind of the trick of this whole trade, is that it's a lot better than when they were drafting Bs and they were becoming Ds in a couple of years.
So what you're basically saying is that we can trade the entire Laval Rocket roster now for Connor McDavid and just fix everything.
Prove me wrong that it wouldn't make Edmonton better if they did that.
It probably would.
No, I'm kidding. I mean, maybe. I don't know. To that point, I think Edmonton's problem is that they don't have the depth.
Exactly.
Like, you know, you can have hockey is a, I think it was Arpin Basu who had an article like this in The Athletic and mentioned it to Marte St. Louis in a press conference, that like hockey is not a top-down sport, right? Like, otherwise Connor McDavid would win every year, or Austin Matthews would win every year, and they don't. And I think that it's about the developing a group of players, right? The only reason why Tampa Bay is successful is not because of Steven Stamkos, but it's because they surrounded Stamkos with the Kucherovs and the Points and the Sorellis.
And found the Yanni Gourdes and
right.
You know, of the world.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, you know, like if Montreal has a group of, you know, potential 30 goal scorers like Jonathan Marchessault and Yanni Gourde out of nowhere, in guys like Harvey Pinard and Farrell and Heinemann, or guys like that, like that's how you build winners. It's not all about having the McDavids, the Matthews, the Bedards. It's about surrounding them properly. And you know, you notice those Chicago teams, right? They still had Taves and Kane, but everybody else around them, the Bolins, the all of those guys, you know, the Panarins, the Sads, the guys like that, when they started leaving, the team got worse.
We've touched on everything pretty important there. I think this is going to be a much more fun year for the Habs and for the Rocket. I think I would echo what Anton said. You know, if you're in the Montreal area and you can get to a Rocket game, they're considerably cheaper than Habs games. And that's going to be a very fun team to watch. And that's kind of the future developing for you right in front of your eyes there. I really think that the Habs are on their way to having a deep NHL roster in the next couple of years. I think the painful years are going to be quickly behind us. So we got maybe one more here, but I do agree. I think it's going to be a lot more fun this time around. We're going to see some young players getting rotated through the NHL lineup. And, you know, it's probably not going to be a playoff year. That's fine. At least we can have a little bit more fun in the process.
Absolutely. None of us are saying that the Canadiens rebuild is done. It's just entering a phase that's going to be a lot more fun to watch. And there'll be more interesting things to pay attention to than just the draft lottery at the end of the day. Matt, Anton, thank you so much for joining me. Thank you all for listening. And we'll see you next time. Have some fun.